Melanie Galen for inviting Judy and I to come speak. I'm going to be presenting some of my work and work that inspires me, and Judy's going to be presenting her Swirl project, the Sex Workers Internet Radio Lounge. It will each be about 40 minutes with question and answers, and with me, if you have any questions after I play something, please feel free to jump in. So I'll give you a little bit of background about me, then I'll play a bunch of pieces, ask questions, and there'll be some time for that at the end. And if there are no questions, I'll just play more work. So I graduated from Brown a little while ago, which is where I started and got introduced to sound. I started as a painter, sculptor, drawer, and then got involved in the student radio station where I started making documentaries. And that led to more experimentation with sound and an appreciation for sound as another medium, like I was using paint or clay in the visual art department. So then I got more involved in the music department at Brown, which has a great resources for experimental music. And I also got interested in field recording and incorporating sounds of the world into language and just playing around in haphazard ways. And then one year at the Third Coast Festival, Rick Moody was a presenter there, and some of the things he said, he's a fiction and nonfiction essay writer, really resonated with me, and that started a friendship with us, and now we collaborate. And the things that he said had to do with non-linearity and being true to the non-linearity of our consciousnesses and not forcing narrative structures or epiphanies on stories that don't want them. And also, equally important, he writes and speaks about the relationship in radio of the background and the foreground, and the relationship between those and how background should become foreground and foreground background. And there's this website, transom.org, where he has posted his manifesto about that, which he speaks really eloquently about literary themes and radio and those ideas. And at that point, I heard his piece, Boys, and I also became familiar with Sherry DeLise's work. And both of that, the piece Boys and Sherry DeLise's work, what struck me is that I like to listen to them over and over, like a song, even though they're not songs. In a little while, I'll play a collaboration between Rick and Sherry. That's an example of that. And if I have time, I'll play a piece of that, the piece called Boys, that first showed me what Rick was talking about in that presentation I heard. It was a collaboration between him, Julia Slavin, and Meredith Monk. So back to Brown, I took a class with a writer, a really amazing experimental poet named Talia Fields, and the class was called The Foreign Home. And everyone in the class was supposed to come in with their home medium and experiment in a new medium, and I came in with sound and experimented in fiction and writing and language. And from that came a collaboration with Talia. She basically handed me a text that was called Story Material from her book called Story Material, and asked me to adapt it in whatever way I wanted. So the first segments I'll play it's a 20-minute piece, and I'll play the first 7 minutes, and then I'll skip forward to a 3-minute section later on. I guess just a little piece about it. It's the piece Story Material is an adaptation of the Cyclops episode in the Odyssey. So this would be an adaptation of an adaptation of the Odyssey.
Vision?
Impaired.
Is it impaired? or supreme or transcending dimension.
The Cyclops casts and dreams.
This island,
remorseless,
all variety flocks and fleeces, flattened,
a hero's worship like her,
sweetest
a self-born storm,
cheese, trumpet vines, and hollyhocks, all species from minuscule nubs with spring glory.
Her visitor comes.
You're a great warrior.
She hails.
Or nothing.
I couldn't agree more. These days I'm nothing. And barely a wind came up to help, leaving me in irons. With lips, necessity. Two minimally and perfect segments, casting all realms into possibility.
Thunder.
Some form of self-made giant.
Sound.
My lips a fallen. Like some great hero, I'm no one.
And this treachery, good at a moment's notice.
A monster rising in a vacant cave. Home, let me at her, Polyphemus.
You're no match.
How parted these stories. And a crew of men united. Or asunder, as if you could mourn their deaths. One by one,
crafty anchor chains,
all this world's wealth, an isle yours cannot not be this chain. No matter how lawless, hurricane like,
delivering a visitor with many hearts, all hands afraid of no one.
A platter of chips tarted with vinegar.
This non-existent name, a must.
Depart.
Nobody's home.
Silence.
Unmoored. Is a ship a labor? I've got some bread up.
But there are no gods. Ratio?
Ratio?
She won't say.
Insight does one think of all. How much does one?
How does this
insight does one think of all? How?
What journey?
City.
Feels like an answer.
How much riddle can be resolved?
Riding waves.
Muted in opposing faces, one giant eye, indifferent to famine. Self-made, self-thought, fed and sown.
The big wind from a warm ocean.
Arising from nothing and named.
A simple wind equaling several thousand hydrogen bombs.
A lone cyclone.
She wonders aloud.
Where am I going?
When I'm the sun is so and so, or daughters of each motion's thoughts,
insight,
Troy, and other battles,
warm to nothing,
a notion causing panic, a terminal statement,
how much
split across mother and father, foreign lands and home, sun upon wind upon wave, homelessness, anyway, exile, a hero, misfit, nothing yearns for us, carelessly it's meaning we yearn, the dull force song. Existing to carry phenomenal carpet. How soft is working wind wave? Masses and
things. How insight does anyone think of all this? How much does one
how does
insight does one think of all? How does
how much does one
how does this insight does one think of all?
How
much does one
how
does this insight does one think of all?
How
much does one
how does insight
does one think of all?
Heroes,
how much does one
eliminate journeys?
Marvel,
how
much does one
behold
insight
does
one
think of all?
How
much
does
one
how does his
insight
does one think of all?
How
much insight does one
I
provide, devouring my soldiers without hunger?
Inflection soaks the neutral sand with colors, appearing folded in, concealing
my as dawn, once called rosy finger, fucks them, nameless, one for all.
A dream Nobody came?
This is a game I facilitated. I started with a recording of Sea Lion in Ecuador and passed it around to 11 producers. And I don't know, there's lots of projects like this out there, but it was fun. I learned a lot about collaborating, trying to harness little bits of time from all these producers that I really admired. It was fun to come up with this nugget, have a piece of all these people. So the producers are, started with me, Pastor Tariq Moody, Sherry DeLise, Ramon Al-Khatib, Eric Barkin, Emily Bateen, Jenny Sarno, Michael Hurst, Jonathan Mitchell, Joy Shapiro, Joe Grimm, and then back to me.
Thank you.
I think maybe I forgot to mention that the only restriction I gave to anyone I passed it to was that they keep the theme of water in mind. Originally, I didn't want to have anything, but I was convinced that it would be good to have at least some vague importance.
First of all, scales are awesome. They sound like felt tipsy ones.
Yeah.
So you started out with this little audio, and the way that you did it is you passed the actual physical piece to each producer. And then at the end, did you do any editing, or you just left?
Well, the last stage, I edited some. I added the old man's voice. I did like the first and the last stage. But I didn't change that much. I just added an element in. But I also passed the stage as it was, and also people sent me the raw sounds I've added, or sometimes some of them. So I passed those along to the next producer too, so that I have something to draw from besides just like chopping them.
So does the process completely additive? I mean, they would get the previous sound and then they add more to it, or they would also allowed to rearrange what was on there?
Oh yeah, completely allowed to rearrange it. I think that's what makes it interesting. I really encourage people to really mix into it, and they did. It sounds really different from stage to stage, and it had a lot to do with people's personal tastes. Like that guy who's talking about, he's a Stoner Duke kind of guy, like one of the producers who mixed it really didn't like his voice, so then he ended up way more of a collage-y element than before. And I also expected it to grow in length a lot more than it did, but it grew in depth, which is really exciting, because I feel like it grew in depth, but it didn't get murky or muddy. It did at some points, but it's a rush there, so. Now I'm going to play... I'm going to play a collaboration between Rick Moody and Sherry Lee's two people that I greatly admire in their work. They collaborated on a project called Dry versus Moist, or The Dry versus the Moist, in which I think I have this correctly, but the process was very important. They thought of all these topics that were either dry or moist, and I think they threw them into a hat, picked two, and ended up with seven pieces that were some combination of those original topics that they had come up with. Some of the topics were a jumping cholla, Marfa, Texas, record spinning, like record static, and an octopus. And I don't know what the topic was for the one that I'm going to play, but it's my favorite. So it's number 5.
It's a spacious recording. You first hear the scale when a bird flies through and its call is echoed by large structures in the environment. A ring of hills, I think, and a lake, definitely. There's a noise floor of insects, soft hissing of shrimp, the occasional splash of a finfish. Sounds like dusk. Sounds humid. Into this tranquil sea makes Holly's heavy footfall. Big dyslexic Holly pushing her way through the bush with her equipment, appearing next to a stand of throw trees. She's out of breath, lumbered up the trail at sunset with the penetrating square waves of crickets, drilling holes in either side of her skull. She has a cough mixture hangover. You can hear Holly's own scenery in the recording. Hear her knitting the sounds together, creating a place to be herself. For a few minutes, there's nothing much. There's the sluggish exchange of salt and fresh waters on seagrass beds. She notices this is a good place to cry. Walks back down the trail 100 meters, takes a crap, and leaves a second mic set up for the flies. They're like tight little motors spinning, far, then close, and they land on the mic capsule with a 1,000-pound crunch. She returns to her headphones. Eyes closed, reflections describe the shape and size of the clearing. Reflections sculpt the air like so many leaf edges. Sounds ebb and flow. What bird is needed here? What song would make the situation right? It's hard going when there's nothing to excite the air. And lo and behold, just then, extended maniac laughter of a kookaburra reaches her left ear, a split second before it reaches her right. And a currawong whistles ooh-ooh like a disapproving schoolgirl. They must be calling from opposite ends of the lake, their arguments delayed and attenuated. Piss off! I'm here, it's mine, screw you. American birds sing as if they've been to a conservatorium, she thinks. Here, their shrieks scratch the sky. And that's the way Holly hears it, like two people standing each other off at a distance, like when she listens to Carter and Joan Cage. Now she's hearing something perfect, and she wonders how it will turn out. When the drama is over, she takes off her headphones, goes down to the water, and splashes it with a stick. She is still hearing rumble from the Pacific Highway, 10 kilometers away.
It's broadcast on ABC and I think Resound in Chicago. Broadcasted too. So there's just so much I like about Sherry's editing. I'll just try to describe a couple of them. She has a really elegant way of choosing sounds in a metaphorical way. Specifically using metonymy. And it's kind of difficult for me to try to explain her use of metonymy because it doesn't have to do with language, it's like metonymy of sound. An example here is the sound of the back and forth. I mean, there are a lot of bird sounds that were going back and forth, but they're really anguished sounding back and forth sound. Do you want to talk about that? Okay, so. For me, the way I experience it is that yourself that, you know, that's not what the story is about. It's, the story is sort of about the recording process, but it's there, and there's some frustration that lies beneath Holly's surface, and that sound brings it out really beautifully instead of having sound potentially corny sound of a little girl or an adolescent girl sort of weeping in the woods, which is what realistically probably would have happened. And by the way, the sound that I'm talking about is the sound of Venus and Serena Williams playing tennis against each other. So it's just incredible that, you know, that she can draw from this, watching the sound on the TV and just turn it into a real poetic metaphor in her work. And also her decision of when to use sounds and when to illustrate sounds and when not to. I think in general she didn't really use any illustrative sounds to say, you know, here we are in the rainforest, when you're in the rainforest. It created a scene that really brought the listener there, but none of it was literal. And for example, there's one part where she says, into this recording mix Holly's heavy footsteps, and you totally expect, you know, she's saying mix Holly's heavy footsteps into this, but they don't come, it's just a continuation of the piano. And I mean, and that disparity between her description of this recording and mixing process that's going on with this entirely different recording process that Cher is actually doing is really interesting to me. I guess that's what I have to say about that piece. I guess we're a little bit running out of time. If people don't have questions, I'll just keep playing.
Can I comment on that last piece real quick, though? One thing that's interesting about the illustrative sound, or representative sound, that it allowed her to go kind of further in that piece than she would have otherwise. Like, obviously, you didn't have the sound of the flies on the crab or like the, mm-hmm. I mean, it continued to have the tone of, like, made for radio, you know, like, sound, you know, like this really calm, serene, like, vocal representation, and then, like, the, you know, the piano. Mm-hmm. But she accessed material that is, like, you know, may not
have been. Yes, maybe it's a way, poetic use of sound is also a way just to fit into our orchestra piece.
But it's lovely.
So this next thing I want to play is something that I just made with Rick. We did this piece about the doors of Brooklyn and moving through spaces in Brooklyn for this station called Residence FM in London, and after we finished, Rick said, now I want to do teapots, and so I went nuts and ordered like 7 teapots on eBay, and we ended up using 4 of them. So here's the piece we ended up making, is called 4 Teapots, and it's about 4 minutes long.
Thank you.
the things that Rick and I found satisfying in it were obviously the way that the teapot sound blended with the traffic. That was kind of fortuitous. And something that I like, you know, it's the sound of teapots in a room, and then it becomes teapots as instruments and sort of little characters as they interact, those sounds interact with each other.
Did you record the traffic separately, or was that part of the
music? No, that's one completely unedited track. So, I know, this day and age is hard to present it, and like, you know that it's unedited.
What were you manipulating? Just the flames, or?
Yeah, just the flames. I started out with the recorder, you know, across the room, and then came up. But yeah, so we were like playing the flames.
So there's just four burners, so yes.
I know, yeah. It's like a burner, two burners.
Did you choose each teapot for a different, did you like test out the sound of the teapot?
Yeah, I did test out all seven, and the chest best. I mean, since I got them from eBay, so I'm doing them. So. I'm not quite at three yet, so I could play something else. Unless you'd like to discuss more. Okay. I could play some of Boys. Do you want to hear that? Okay. Or I can play this like water cello thing I'm working on, or I don't know if the driver's is moist. That's an option. Okay, I'll play this water thing. This is a friend I'm working on making into a like a 4-channel installation. And what I'm going to play you is kind of like a song, but what I'm working on now is going to be an environment. This which sounds so different. I mean, he really like worked with it with the cello, and I had this like reverb on some water rhythms, and he echoed that in some cello over them, and it became this whole different thing.
And did you give him any direction?
No. So I'm gonna do that also for this project that I'm creating. A similar sort of thing in five four channels. I'll talk to that to stereo, send it to him. Ask him not to send it back in mono.
Emailing
these, and